The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Coming up on NFL Live, time is ticking on the college football season, and with potential number one overall pick Trevor Lawrence chiming in as the Power Five commissioners meet, how could a cancellation impact the NFL draft and beyond? And wait till you hear what Hall of Famer Brett Favre said about the outlook for Tom Brady in Tampa. Will TB12 regret leaving the familiarity of New England? Plus, for the NFL's 101st season, we go back to a little NFL 101 with the Hail Mary, the best game-saving heaves in NFL history. Hello, welcome into NFL Live, along with Adam Schefter, Dan Orlovsky, and Booger McFarland. I'm Field Yates. And in what is a developing story, the plug may be pulled on the fall college football season. More discussions will be held today after the commissioners of the Power Five conferences held an emergency meeting on Sunday to discuss the possibility of canceling or postponing the fall sports season. Schefter, let's get right to you. And what impact could the Power Five schools decision have on the NFL as we move closer and closer to the start of the regular season?
Field, it clearly would leave a major void in the sports calendar depending on what college football decides. Now, again, keep in mind that the hockey playoffs go until early October, the NBA playoffs until mid-October, the Major League Baseball playoffs until late October. There's a presidential election in early November, but after those events, the calendar clears up. The NFL always was going to own that space, but it could opt to own that space on even more frequent basis in prime time. Now, there is the Sports Broadcast Act, which the NFL would obviously have to figure out a way around to try to get games on Friday night if that was their intent, but there is precedent for that sort of thing in the event of rare situations like a global pandemic. But at the very least, the NFL would have the flexibility to move games to Saturday afternoons, to Saturday nights, to Sunday nights, Monday nights, because essentially there are no fans in the stadiums. There's no demand for hotel rooms in other cities. And so the league could move the schedule around to make it work so that it would be a TV bonanza in the event that there wasn't college football.
Well, Booger, athletes and certainly football coaches can be creatures of habit. How would it impact you as a player if you're playing on even more days of the week than just the usual Sunday and occasional Thursday or Monday night game?
Well, as long as we don't start playing on from Sunday to Wednesday, I don't think it's that big of a deal. Like, these players already play on Sunday and turn around again and play on Thursday. I think the important thing, Phil, is to know when you're playing. That way you can prepare your week and know exactly how long you have to prepare. You're right, we are creatures of habit, and so I can lay my week out, I can get my treatment, I can lift my weights, I can do my conditioning. That way I'm ready to go, whether we play on Friday, whether we play Saturday, Sunday, or Monday. But as Schefter said, make no mistake about it, if there is a void in the calendar and the NFL sees a way that they can capitalize, more importantly, they can bring football to their fans because the NCAA is going to postpone or cancel, then I think the NFL is going to take advantage of it. And as a player, we like standalone games. Like, players like Monday night. They like Thursday night. They like a game where the rest of the country can tune in and watch them and only them, because let's not forget, on Sunday afternoon, you have three or four games going on. So the standalone games are always welcome to the players, Phil.
Totally agree, Boog. You know, I'd say this as well with the time frame. Most guys in the NFL, except for the rookies, have played on Thursday night, so they know what a four-day rest looks like. A bunch of them have played on Sunday night or Monday night football, so longer breaks. A bunch of them have dealt with an NFL bye week and played in London, so they're used to change. I would ask this. The NFL has already changed their COVID-19 testing protocols, and they've got very strict guidelines of how they're going to handle that. But those are really set up on a Sunday to Sunday weekly game schedule. If the games do change, how does the protocol change? Because if a game is supposed to be on Sunday and they change it to a Friday, does a player have to wait a certain amount of time still before their positive test is null and void and they're allowed to play again? Or how long does a player have to be quarantined? Because I'd be concerned that if my game is on Sunday, four of my players could play, but then if the game is moved to a Friday, then those four players do not have a certain amount of time or their required amount of time in condition with the COVID-19 testing. So I would just want to know how the testing and the protocol with the game schedule changing would be affected.
Really crazy to think about NFL games being played potentially 4 or 5 days of the week. And presumptive 2021 number one overall draft pick Trevor Lawrence from Clemson tweeted the following in response to, college football potentially being canceled. People are at just as much, if not more, risk if we don't play. Players will all be sent home to their own communities where social distancing is highly unlikely and medical care and expenses will be placed on the families if they were to contract COVID-19. Not to mention the players coming from situations that are not good for them or their own future and having to go back to that. Football is a safe haven for so many people. We are more likely to get the virus in everyday life than playing football. Having a season also incentivizes players being safe and taking all of the right precautions to try to avoid contracting COVID because the season/teammates' safety is on the line. Without the season, as we've seen already, people will not social distance or wear masks and take the proper precautions. Ohio State quarterback Justin Fields was one of the many players who tweeted the statement that read in part, quote, "We all want to play football this season. We want to use our voices to establish open communication and trust between players and officials and ultimately create a college football players association." He said the statement was, quote, "representative of the players of all five Power Five conferences." All right, so we're joined now by Mel Kiper, a man synonymous with the NFL draft. But before we get to Mel, let's get back to Schefty for a minute. Adam, how could playing college football in the spring impact the NFL draft?
Well, Field, there are so many hypotheticals before we even get to that particular position. But let's just say this. It spells out in the collective bargaining agreement that the NFL draft can be held anywhere from February 14th to June 2nd, and that decision belongs to the commissioner. So it's spelled out that way. So if they move football, college football, to the spring, it's always possible that the draft could come in May or June, early June, if that's what the league decides best suits the system if college football moves. But again, there are so many hypotheticals, but there is built-in flexibility in the collective bargaining agreement if the NFL needs it this upcoming spring and summer in 2021.
Mel, separate and apart from when the NFL draft is being held, there are going to be a lot of players. Many have already stated their intentions as such that will not play college football at all, whether it's in the fall of 2020 or the spring of 2021. From a process standpoint, from an evaluation standpoint, how are GMs and scouts going to adjust their methodology to size up these players as prospects at the NFL level?
Field, I spent more time this summer evaluating players than I ever had, anticipating an interrupted season, no season, obviously not a normal season in any way, shape, or form. So I think you look at the kids will be affected, the transfers. We're looking for that one great opportunity somewhere else. Kid coming off an injury, a backup reserve that was going to have a final opportunity maybe to prove himself. Obviously, you think about those kids and how you're going to evaluate them. Interaction with the coaches, talking to the coaches about players that were on the cusp of being really good, but we haven't seen it yet, on tape even. So all that interaction with college coaches, I think this year will be more important than it ever has been before.
Yeah, no question. Think about Joe Burrow a year ago, who took to Twitter himself and noted he may not have been drafted if he had not had the chance to play this past season. But Booger, you were a first-round pick, a dominant college football player, and of course a great NFL player as well. How would you advise draft-eligible prospects as to whether or not they should play in the spring if indeed the season is delayed into spring of 2021?
Well, first of all, I want to say hello to Mel. Normally, we only see Mel between like January and the draft. We usually don't see him in August. So, Mel, it's so good to see you in August, Mel. Glad you could come out of hibernation and off your 3-month vacation. Now, Phil.
Thank you, pal.
Without a doubt, Phil, to your question, if I know I'm going to be a first-round pick, I'll give you a prime example. Had I come out my junior year, I was given a second-round grade. So I went back to school for my senior year. If I had known I was going to be a first-round pick and you gave me an opportunity to play in the spring, I need to know what the NFL is going to do to adjust. Because if the NFL is not going to adjust their calendar, I'm not going to play. Because if we're talking spring season, in my book, that means we're going to start sometime in March. We're going to finish sometime in late April, early May. Well, when's the draft going to be? When can I work out? When can I show the NFL what I'm capable of? I understand my love for LSU and my love for my school, but you got to understand, a lot of these kids go to college with the dreams and aspirations of being a pro football player. So regardless of how much I love LSU and I give my right arm to that school, I'm going to want to know how this affects my draft status before I decide to play. Because guys like Mel Kiper want to see, can I play four quarters? Mel wrote me up and said, yeah, Boog, he's kind of out of shape. He can only play two quarters. I need to go back and show Mel I can play four quarters of football. And if I do that, then I can become a first-round pick.
Yeah, I think Boog is problematic in the spring with the injury factor. Players don't play in a bowl game because they want to get ready for the draft and not risk injury. You're playing football that close to a draft, that close to a season in the NFL starting up, and you can sustain an injury. How does your draft stock impact that whole thing? And I think that's something that will be a big concern. Do you play a few games, then say, I'm done, shut it down early? Spring football would be problematic in a lot of ways, knowing for a lot of these kids, an NFL future is ahead, and they certainly do not want that late, you're talking about the spring, to risk an injury that could impact their rookie season.
Mel, I want to thank you for being with us today, and I'm going to make sure that the world knows that I think Booger is misleading them, because I have a reliable source telling me you were breaking down college tape until 5 a.m. this morning. So I know you're putting in those long hours that
you
are not just January through April.
Not on the kayak all the time.
That's just most of the time. In other COVID-19 related news, NFL game officials can opt out of the 2020 season in exchange for a $30,000 stipend and a guarantee that their jobs will be protected in 2021, according to a preliminary agreement announced Sunday between the league and the NFL's referee.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Association. New on NFL Live from our Saints NFL Nation reporter Mike Triplett. Saints running back Alvin Kamara said his contract is not a focus and never has been a big focus for him, even though he's heading into the final year of his rookie deal. Said he told his agent not to even mention any contract talks to him unless anything gets serious. His focus is on the season. Well done. The Chiefs are back to work and now focused on one goal, running it back. The first step is training camp, and here's what one Patrick Mahomes had to say about camp.
Where we're at now versus last year, I feel like a lot of guys are still in physically the shape that they were in, or even better shape. I think guys really took it upon themselves during this quarantine time to keep their bodies in shape. And so that was, I don't want to say surprising to see, but that was good to see, exciting to see when you come into camp and everybody is right where we left off at. So now it's about the mental part of it. I mean, when you get these reps, I mean, it's hard to reenact these reps on Zoom meetings. So as these guys are getting more and more reps, we're putting in all these new plays. I think the coaches are doing a good job of really emphasizing the details of every single play, that so that when we hit the field on that Thursday night, that we can play fast and play Chief football.
Well, Mahomes is feeling optimistic, and I would too, considering he became the youngest MVP in Super Bowl history and later signed a 10-year, $450 million extension. I thought it was a fake chef retreat when it first came out. He's already invested some of that money, by the way, becoming a part owner of the Kansas City Royals. Here's Andy Reid on Mahomes buying into his hometown Royals.
Well, I'm proud of him. You know how he's wired. I mean, he's all in with the city, and I think he expressed that, if he already hadn't, that's been a definite sign that he is, I would say. And he loves baseball. So it's a match. I joked him, you know, he can't play and do both, but he can be a part owner of one and play the other. So
it's two. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Loves.
All right, well, Tom Brady is no longer competing with the Chiefs for AFC supremacy. The 43-year-old now resides in the NFC with the Bucs, and while the six-time Super Bowl champion is considered the greatest quarterback of all time, there's still plenty to learn about his new surroundings as Brady addressed the media on Thursday.
I think every football season's a big challenge in one way or another. And obviously for me, you know, changing teams after a long period of time, you know, giving me an opportunity to really look at myself and what I want to continue to, you know, achieve in my career and think that I can bring to a team. It's been different having the opportunity, you know, over this time to, you know, move and then to, you know, for example, study my playbook. I mean, I really haven't had to do that in 19 years. So, you know, you forget, man, that's really tough. Like all the different terminologies and, you know, you're going back a very long time in my career to, you know, to really have to put the mental energy in like I did.
Well, Hall of Fame quarterback Brett Favre told the USA Today that Brady might be most affected by the NFL coronavirus restrictions, saying, quote, "For a guy like Tom Brady, you've got to be scratching your head. Of all the times to change teams, he's got to be saying, how am I going to get the chemistry I'm wanting to have with the guys, with my new teammates, with everything that's limiting getting ready for a season?" All right, Dan, so what's your reaction to Brett Favre's quotes about Tom Brady and readiness and chances to be in sync with his teammates by the start of the season?
Yeah, I totally disagree with it. First of all, Tom Brady has become the greatest quarterback of all time, not because of his physical talent, but because of his mental talent. He's the greatest brain that's ever played that position. And so this is not going to be some insurmountable task for him to kind of really get a grasp of. Number two, Tom Brady himself has said there is not a defense that he has not seen. There's not like it's not like he's going to come out against the New Orleans Saints and go, "Wow, I've never seen this kind of defense." He has seen everything. Now, a lot of times when a player is going from one scheme to another theme, scheme, especially the quarterback, a defense will try to attack you with blitzes, right? Does that quarterback really understand all of his protection rules and communications in the span of 3 or 4 seconds to make sure that that blitz is picked up? Again, Tom Brady has seen every blitz in the NFL. And two, at the end of the day, when you blitz a quarterback, more often than not, it becomes one-on-one football. The Buccaneers got a bunch of guys that can win one-on-one. Evans one-on-one, Godwin one-on-one, Gronk one-on-one, Brate one-on-one, Howard one-on-one. So it's just as much of a challenge to a defense to feel like, okay, do we really want to do this to Tom Brady? And then I'd say like that, he spent this offseason pushing the envelope with the workouts with his teammates and going and spending a lot of time kind of throwing the ball, getting timing down, getting rhythm, talking their offense. So I don't see that. Tom Brady's the best brain they ever play the position. He will be just fine. They will all get on the same page quicker than anybody expects.
You know, here's the thing that I would add to that is that if you follow Tom Brady, Dan, over the years, you know he's a rep guy. Like if you go back to last offseason, he kind of stayed away. But before that, he wants to be there. He wants to take reps over and over and over and over. And I don't care how many times we saw him in Tampa throwing with his receivers, those weren't organized reps. And so I can understand what Brett Favre is saying, that this pandemic is going to affect Tom Brady. But I would also caution everyone not to make too much of this. Anytime you've played as much football as Tom Brady has played, you've seen every defense that there is imaginable. The one thing you don't know is you don't know how your teammates are going to react when you make your adjustments. That's why the organized practices are so important. That's why being in a huddle, listening to the coaches' adjustments, listening to how these guys are coached, being with Bruce Arians and being with Byron Leftwich and seeing how those guys are going to perform under the gun. I think that's the biggest thing. And Brett Favre knows that. I'm never going to dispute what Brett says. I would just add to the reason why he's saying that is because Brady is a rep guy. But make no mistake about it, Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich are making sure that Tom Brady, now that he's in the building, is getting as many reps as he can as possible. And I don't worry about Tom Brady. I worry about some of these other players in the league that are kind of dealing with the pandemic more than I do Tom Brady.
I'm only surprised because Brett Favre once signed with the Vikings 36 days before the season began. and the Vikings started 9-1. He had 21 touchdowns for the first 10 games of the year. But Adam, there is a lot of newness around the league this year, not just for players, but also for coaches and teams around the league. What are some of the other common concerns that you hear from teams in conversations leading up to the year?
Well, listen, Phil, Brett Favre can say that about Tom Brady. Tom Brady might be the last guy you worry about in terms of preparation and the work he's going to do during the offseason. If we go back to 2011, which was the last time there was really no organized team activities during the offseason due to the lockout, at that point in time, once teams came back to camp in late July, at that point, there was a outbreak of soft tissue injuries and things of that nature, like torn Achilles. And I think when you talk to teams and coaching staffs and front offices around the league right now, the one thing they're concerned about are those soft tissue injuries and Achilles that spiked up in 2011. That's what teams are going to be looking out to avoid this summer. And again, when Brett Favre says Tom Brady will be the most affected by COVID, all it takes is one guy who didn't necessarily work hard during the offseason or whose body isn't in shape for him to tear his Achilles and to impact his team's chances. We don't even know right now who COVID might most affect going into the season. That might be something that we see here in the coming weeks, but that is something that teams are all leery and wary about, is the amount of soft tissue injuries and torn Achilles that could be coming later this summer.
Yeah, health is certainly something to monitor around the NFL, but let's get back to Tom Brady for just one second. As his former teammate and perhaps his closest friend, of course, with the Patriots, is Julian Edelman. He addressed the media for the first time since January, and our Patriots reporter Mike Reese was on the call. Mike, what can you tell us?
Well, Phil, this was highly anticipated because, as you mentioned, few are closer to Tom Brady than Julian Edelman. So whatever he planned to say in his first public remarks, really since Brady left the team, it was going to set a tone for the Patriots. Take a listen.
Obviously, yeah, we played a lot of ball together. I love him to death, but you know, the train keeps moving, as it will when, you know, I'm not playing here or something.
What stood out to you about that workout that you did with Cam Newton?
I mean, he's a specimen for sure. You know, when you first meet him, just his stature, the dude is large, put together well, and he's got a great energy. He's got a great energy about himself. I was really impressed with, you know, his work ethic and his mindset.
And that's really the storyline here in New England, going from Tom Brady to Cam Newton. And Field, I would say, talk to any player, and the one word that keeps coming up when Cam Newton's name is mentioned is that energy. Veteran defensive tackle Lawrence Guy said he's noticed everyone has embraced Newton. He said out on the field, he walked out with Jarrett Stidham, Brian Hoyer. They were talking about plays, and Lawrence Guy said he can't wait to see that playbook come to life.
Well, Mike, we're all looking forward to seeing Cam back on the field. The incomparable Mike Reese. Thanks as always.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
For joining us here on NFL Live. Back on NFL Live, and before we get into the 2020 rookie quarterbacks, let's review the class of 2019. Kyler Murray became the first number one pick to win offensive rookie with over 4,000 yards of defense. That'll do it. It was an up-and-down year for the number six pick, Daniel Jones. While he set a Giants rookie record with 24 touchdown passes, he also fumbled a league-high 18 times. Yikes. Washington's Dwayne Haskins didn't start until week 9, but he really struggled, posting a QBR of just 26 with 7 touchdowns and 7 picks. And Denver may have found their guy in Drew Lock, who stepped up and led the Broncos to a 4-1 record in the team's final 5 games. And after going to the Jaguars with the 178th pick, Gardner Minshew and his mustache passed for 237 yards per game, second amongst all rookie starters, and even ahead of Kyler Murray. Dan, you've studied these guys intensely. What would be a trait that stands out to you in looking back at each of last year's rookie quarterbacks that we've discussed?
Yeah, Field, I'd say that each of them kind of showed a trait that, you know, sets them up to have a long, successful career in the NFL, and it showed on tape, and you only have to expect that it will continue to be a part of their career.
Rookie class of quarterbacks begins with, of course, Joe Burrow, who went to the Bengals, and Tua Tagovailoa went to the Dolphins, and then Justin Herbert at pick six went to the Chargers. It's the first time we've seen three quarterbacks go in the first six picks since 1999. Then some more heavily discussed picks, including Jordan Love going to the Packers in the first round, plus Jalen Hurts to the Eagles in the second round. Let's go back to Shefty, and as for this year's rookie quarterback class, there is no OTAs, mini camps, or preseason games, but what are you hearing in league circles about expectations for these top rookie signal callers?
Well, it's pretty simple. We could break it down this way. I think Joe Burrow will wind up being the starting quarterback for the Bengals on opening day, barring anything happening this summer. I don't think Justin Herbert is ready to start. The Chargers are in no rush to bring him along. Tyrod Taylor, is he the expected opening day starting quarterback for the Chargers? And then, of course, Jordan Love is not going to play. We know that at that point in time. And the real question will be Miami with Tua and whether he can overtake Ryan Fitzpatrick. Going to be hard to do that in an offseason where there weren't OTAs, where there weren't preseason games. I would think that Fitzpatrick will wind up starting on opening day, but the Dolphins have all month to figure that out and decide. Burrow starts, Herbert doesn't, and we'll see what happens in Miami, though I think the situation favors Fitzpatrick starting on opening day.
Everybody needs a little bit of Fitzmagic right now. Dan, you reviewed some of the key attributes you look for in rookie quarterbacks, but how confident are you in the number one overall pick, Joe Burrow, as a rookie starter and sensation, perhaps, in Cincinnati?
I cannot wait to watch Joe Burrow play. I'm so excited. First of all, I'd say this. He's in a great scheme with Zach Taylor and Brian Callahan, his offensive coordinator. This scheme that comes from, you know, Mike Shanahan, Gary Kubiak, Sean McVay, it's not super demanding intellectually on a quarterback. You know, it's not like quarterbacks have to sit there pre-snap, diagnose exactly what's going on and know where to go with the football right when you get the ball. It's going to be more of your play action offense. And when a team does that, a lot of times it's go play. It's your progression is 1, 2, 3, 4, and you're just looking for a certain defender. So that is going to help the process, the intellectual aspect of things. Number two, they got some players in Cincinnati. AJ Green back, can he stay healthy? Boyd is one of the better slot receivers in the NFL. I'd say T. Higgins, expect some good things out of him. And then Giovanni Bernard and Joe Mixon, a good running back core. And then, you know, Joan Williams coming over to stay healthy, hopefully, their first round pick from last year, Jonah Williams. That offensive line should be a little bit better. So there's some people around him to get the ball to. And then three, his number one trait is he does not panic with the football. And all quarterbacks get themselves into trouble when they have to think faster. And it sets or it forces panic out of them, especially young rookie quarterbacks. Joe Burrow doesn't have that in his game. And so for those three things or those three reasons, I expect him to play really well given, or no matter if there's an offseason, training camp, preseason games, I expect him to be a stud.
All right, so Joe Burrow, an LSU legend. Let's go to our LSU legend, Booger. And Booger, amongst this year's rookie quarterback class, is there one player that maybe concerns you most?
Yeah, Phil, you know, I think Tua concerns me, but not from an intellectual standpoint nor a talent standpoint. Let's not forget, we haven't seen him take a hit in live competition since he got hurt. And I know Fitzpatrick will probably get the start, but at some point, I expect Tua Tagovailoa to get on the football field, and we just don't know what to expect. He's a guy that likes to drop back in the pocket, and if it's not there, he's going to move around. Can he protect himself? How's that hip going to react once he gets hit for the first time? How's he going to be? Is he going to be a little gun shy, having gone through one of the most painful injuries that he's ever had? So I concern myself with Tua from a health standpoint. Talent-wise, he's off the charts. His release is phenomenal. He's very accurate with the football, especially as you go down the field. But from a health standpoint, I worry about it. And Phil, just to add to the Joe Burrow comment that Dan was speaking of, about Burrow. Burrow's going to be phenomenal, and I agree with that his best trait is he doesn't panic with the football. Here's the thing that I would add to Burrow. Burrow struggled his first year starting at LSU because he said the formations were really condensed. He really couldn't see everything. He really started to flourish when Joe Brady came down there, and Joe Brady opened the picture up. He opened the formation up, and Burrow could see everything. I hope that up in Cincinnati, Zach Taylor pays attention to that and gives him an opportunity to see some open formations, not just on third and long, but allow him, allow the defense to uncover. See, Zach Taylor comes from the Sean McVay. Sean McVay is a run first, play action system with a quarterback. His back is going to be to the defense sometimes in play action. Burrow hasn't functioned in that. He functioned, he flourished, he became the Joe Burrow that Dan Orlovsky fell in love with when he was in the shotgun and he could see the entire 53 and a third. So I just truly hope that Zach Taylor implements some of that in the offense where Burrow can see the picture and then have that quick release.
Well, there are some pieces, as Dan mentioned, around him that should allow this Cincinnati offense. What do you got, Dan? What do you want?
No, I just think that's a really good point by Booger. You know, like, that's why I mentioned some of those people around Joe Burrow, because you can't do that as a play caller. You can't open up the picture. You can't spread out teams if you don't have guys to spread them out with. And so that's why Booger's point is so important that, yeah, you want Cincinnati to do that, and that's why I wanted to make the point of those receivers and tailbacks. They have the people to do that, and so hopefully that marriage is there where they sprinkle a little of that in with that play-action movement game. It's a great point.
Things are looking up in Cincinnati. By the way, Shefty reported over the weekend they actually are hosting on a visit free agent defensive lineman Mike Daniels. And remember, in the NFL right now, if you're bringing a player in for a visit, there has to be a potential intention to sign. So perhaps some more.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Reinforcements up front for Cincinnati. In honor of the NFL's 101st season, we continue our NFL 101 series, giving you a crash course on some of the iconic plays and moments that make the league so great. Today's lesson is the Hail Mary, and the Hail Mary is the name given to last-second prayers heaved halfway down the field. But where exactly did Hail Mary come from? The term was coined during a 1922 Notre Dame football game when Fighting Irish players would say Hail Mary prayers together before scoring touchdowns. But Booger, you as a defensive player, what's the best story about a Hail Mary from your playing days?
Well, listen, Phil, playing defense, I played in a system called the Tampa 2 system, and everyone called it old and antiquated, but one thing it was it was safe. So we weren't going to give up any Hail Marys. We're going to drop our defenders all the way back. And on top of that, an underrated part of the Hail Mary defense is still the pass rush. We talk about putting Keyshawn or Calvin Johnson and all these big-time receivers in the back where the ball is going to be thrown. What about the pass rush up front? Because the quarterback typically holds the ball for 4 or 5 seconds to throw a Hail Mary. So we were too good in Tampa on defense to give up Hail Marys. So I'm not really sure what these other defenses are doing, like Detroit and some of these other teams. But in Tampa, we didn't do that.
Bravado right you know, there.
You know, Dan was bringing up the Aaron Rodgers throws. Aaron Rodgers has made some of the greatest Hail Mary throws we've seen in the history of football. You saw the play there against the Detroit Lions. And then there were the plays in the playoff game against the Arizona Cardinals where he had 2 Hail Mary throws on one drive to cover the length of the field to beat the other team. And Rodgers has thrown these balls, and I honestly think that he might be the greatest Hail Mary quarterback in NFL history based on the strength and height and success of some of these throws, not just in that game right there with this particular play, but the one that stands out is that playoff game against Arizona where he had the 2 Hail Marys on the same drive.
Yeah, and Adam, to your point, I mean, since 2008, he has 3 Hail Mary touchdown passes, the most in the NFL in that time. He just has that way about him, a 60-minute quarterback to defend. The Jump is next right here on ESPN.